Welcome to today's episode. I'm Stefan Lendi.
Vanessa Gentile.
And we're diving deep into the world of AI, exploring how it is reshaping businesses and transforming the way that we work.
Joining us, Roman, a data expert with nearly a decade of experience in the field.
Roman has been at the forefront of AI development and is currently helping companies unlock the potential of AI. Roman, great to see you. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for being part of this podcast.
Thank you for having me here.
Roman, can you introduce yourself, please?
Yes, absolutely. So my name is Roman, and I'm a solution engineer at Salesforce. And as you already mentioned, I focused a big part of my career on the topic of data, which means specifically topics like data migration, harmonization, consolidation of ERP systems, for example, and data quality.
And you've worked with large companies throughout your career, huh?
Yeah, so naturally, I mean, you know, those topics, they sound very complex. But essentially what is happening, as you mentioned, big companies, they have a lot of different systems, right? And at a certain point of time, they want to consolidate them to improve processes, be more efficient. And I was part of such large projects, specializing on the data layer, bringing all of that together and unleashing potential for those customers.
Everyone who works in AI, they have that one story where they say, this is what triggered that spark about AI. What was your story?
Yeah, so again, as I was working with data and, you know, there are different sayings on the market, data is the fuel of AI, I was kind of always close to that. But what really triggered my curiosity, so to say, was an event of a big software company where I, for the first time, saw AI in physical action. So let me maybe explain that a little bit. So it was in the year 2018, 2019, and back in the day, predictive AI was kind of the new kid on the block, or like the big important area. And when you talk about predictive AI, there are use cases like, let's say we want to predict the demand of a product. So let's say I like to drink tea, and now imagine you're being a producer of tea. You want to know what kind of flavor is going to sell well and what kind of season. So cinnamon, for example, is probably likely to be sold well in the winter and so on. And based on this prediction, which is based on historical data, I then can adjust and make my production, for example, more efficient. But there are more areas on this predictive AI risk analysis. Will an individual be able to pay back, for example, a loan in the financial bank area? And such use cases, right? So this is predictive AI. And this is all on the screen. You're working on computers and stuff like that. But when I mentioned AI in physical action, I saw that what the company did, they combined AI with drones. And they did this for farmers of palm oil, right? So you probably know palm oil is within chocolate, within sweets, so a lot of product.
But so how do you combine AI with drones and that in farming? That goes beyond my imagination now.
That's exactly the good question, right? So here is the focus to make it more efficient and support the environment. So farming on palm oil is, it requires a lot of water, right? Watering is there a big topic. So what they were doing is they attached cameras to those drones. The drones flew over the field, I would say once a day. And the cameras took pictures of the leaves of individual palm trees. And then the AI in the background was able to analyze the condition of the actual leaf, the color, the thickness. And based on this AI prediction, they were able to individually watering the plant itself. So they were able to reduce the consumption of water for this field by a huge degree. And that was the first time where I said, all right, we are not only looking at the computer and seeing AI being there, but we have now interactions with the physical world and we can make our world better with the new technology we have.
So this is really impressive, right? How this then evolves and then comes into reality and for what and what kind of, you know, service you at the end can deliver thanks to AI. But let's go into the past on the last 2 years, especially since ChatGPT was released. How did AI evolve?
So yes, it's a very good question. So yeah, we are already 2 years into the journey, and you probably know the concept of the hype cycle where a new technology comes in. That was the case with, let's say, blockchain or Internet of Things. You have a big hype, excitement in the beginning because we see so much potential and we have this attitude of this technology is going to change the world overnight. But then we realize at a certain point of time, all right, there are some limitations, right? It's not able to do all of what we have imagined. And it's followed by frustration. However, there is still a lot of value. So we adopt the technology, you know, and then the curve goes up. And it becomes, you know, basically a part of our daily routine, so to say. With generative AI, it's different. We had high expectations in the beginning. And as we move forward, we recognize, all right, we have some limitations, but we immediately come up with new solutions, new technology. So mm-hmm. basically to enrich this AI architecture, which is being built right now, mm-hmm. to not go too much or not at all almost into the frustration mode, but we keep up the excitement and we see actually the great use cases we had in mind in the beginning slowly coming to life.
Let's talk about LLM. So the large language models, that's what everyone knows when we say AI. Yep. AI is, of course, not limited to ChatGPT and all these models. But what about LLMs? What are their demands? What do they need?
Well, that's a good question. And I think the topic of LLM, if I could rephrase it, what else do we need in addition to the LLM to make this magic possible? Mm-hmm. Because the LLM is one part of the equation to bring the power of AI into an organization. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to that, I like to refer to the concept of the three important components, which is UI, user interface, the model, which is the LLM you just have mentioned, and then the data which supports the LLM, right? So the UI, the user interface, is where you interact with the LLM itself. It needs to be easy to use, and it also needs to live where the business user, obviously in the business context, where he or she lives.
And what kind of model you need for this innovation?
That's an important question that every company needs to think about. Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, yes, we started with ChatGPT, mm-hmm. but we have different options right now when it comes to the models themselves, right? We have OpenAI offering a variety of models. We have also so-called open source models like from Meta and Llama, which can be used. Google is very present in that market. So it's really a discovery, and based on the needs of the company, we can support defining and deciding what is the best approach and what kind of model to use.
Talk about innovations in that field.
There are constantly innovations. I mean, you can see the cycle almost in, I would say, every 6 months, there are new features, new functionalities being released. So when we look back on the last 2 years, we started with kind of a chatbot experience. We are now in a multimodal environment where you can write something, but it will generate a picture for you, an image, right? We will move slowly into the area where you write, request something, and it will generate even a video for you, mm-hmm. right? We are starting seeing this. So there is a lot of innovation coming up. And again, every organization needs to understand what are their requirements and what kind of components do they need to improve.
Actually, this brings me to the next question. So what does a company need to be very well, to be successful in this AI implementation and the strategy?
Yes. So then let me quickly go back. I kind of started already the explanation of the three components. We covered AI, which is UI, the user interface,
yeah.
where we interact with the model, which is the second layer, right? And different options on that. And then you have a third layer, which is data. Mm-hmm. Right? Data is super important because without the right context given to the model, the AI will not produce content of value for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Give us an example of what that means, contextual data. What is that specifically so we can better understand that?
Okay, so let's go through a practical example. Stefan, let's imagine you're a sales representative, right? You're working for a company mm-hmm. and I'm your prospect, a potential new company you want to engage with. I'm the CEO. You want to write me an email requesting a meeting and you want to show me your great product and how it will change my organization.
We have the greatest product, please buy it. That's how we used to do it, right?
And every CIO will immediately set up a meeting with you.
Right? How do we do this better? How does AI help and how does contextual data help?
So let's go now with, based on this example, through those three layers, UI, model, and data. So UI, you have now two options, right? you have typically as a sales representative, you would work within an environment, within a system, for example, Salesforce, the leading CRM system. Now you want the model to generate you an email. What you can do is you can have your window of CRM, Salesforce open, and next to it, maybe ChatGPT. And then you copy the content, and then you go into your chat interface and you write, hey, write an email to Roman, the CEO, and please ask him to set up a meeting with me. However, I mean, the results that ChatGPT will create for you will not be really relevant, and especially not relevant for me as the CIO which receives that. So first of all, we have here the first challenge, you know, how to implement. We need to bring those words together. We don't want to have two applications where the users work. We want to bring the power of the model of the LLM into the UI, which is, for example, Salesforce. So I don't need to switch back and forward, to jump and forward within between interfaces. So now you are within Salesforce, and you can now open immediately a window, and you can ask Einstein. Einstein is our artificial AI engine, right? So you ask Einstein, hey, Einstein, can you please write an email to Roman, the CIO of the customer I want to engage with, and ask him for a meeting? So that's the first part.
And so that's how UI, the model, and data, contextual data, actually come together. That's what you're seeing.
That's exactly it, right? So we now have the component of AI, which lives within the application the business user works within it. We have the model, which in this case, ChatGPT and OpenAI are supporting us with, right? So even though it lives within Salesforce, there is ChatGPT behind it. But the third part we haven't touched so far, which is the data. Because maybe you had interactions already with my employees. You might have reached out to different departments. You might have discussed use cases with them. You had emails back and forwards. You
had calls. That's information I would, for example, find in Salesforce, right?
Exactly. This is where this information lives, right? All the interactions, all the opportunities, all of this contextual data. So now, as you said, we're bringing all of that together. You are telling Einstein, hey, write please an email to Roman and tell him how our software will support his business and his KPIs based on the interactions I had with his employees. And Einstein goes and grabs all of these data points, all of this context, and crafts a beautiful personalized email to me. So when I open it up, I will immediately recognize that's not a spam. It is actually of value. I have an understanding you have done your job and it's really dedicated to me, and I'm more motivated to reach out to you. So this is just one of many examples how we can bring those three components of AI, the model, and the data to our business users within Salesforce.
This brings me to another topic, which after the data comes the security. How important is the security of the data? And I think with the importance of security, a lot of concerns around from customers. So tell me about the importance of this topic in regards to AI and the implementation in their company.
I mean, what I always hear, Vanessa, is always the, this is all my data. I don't want to send all of my data out to some kind of an LLM. Is that also the concern that you hear, Roman?
That's 100% the concern, right? And if you as a listener, you're worried, hey, I don't want to send my data to an LLM, you're right. However, we are Salesforce. We really thought and invested on that topic. Before we released any of our generative AI features, we created and invented something which we call the trust layer, which secures the data when using this new technology. So essentially what it is, it's its own architecture, and every LLM and every generation happening in Salesforce go through it. So let me maybe explain in a couple of bullet points what it actually does. So when you send out or when you request a generation, the trust layer will retrieve the data secure from the environment, right? All of these examples, all of the contexts are being pulled. Then what we are doing is we will encrypt the data, right? To make sure it's when the transition, it is safe during that period. We send it to the LLM, And then with the LLM, and specifically with OpenAI and ChatGPT, we have a so-called zero retention policy.
A zero retention policy. That means that no data is retained with the LLM. Is that, do I understand that correctly?
You understand correctly. In simple terms, they are not allowed to use the data of our customers for training purposes. They're not allowed to store any of the data. That means they receive the request, the so-called the prompt, with all the context. They generate the answer, they send it back. Afterwards, everything gets deleted, as it would have never reached their environment.
This is very interesting. And what about the policy, the security policy within the company?
I mean, this aligns with the security measures. I have to say that with new technology, we have new responsibilities. Mm-hmm. So very often when I talked, in fact, this morning just to customers, and they have explained me, they spent 6 months reviewing and recreating their security policies because of GenAI, mm-hmm. right? And I think a lot of companies are now just starting to think about that. And it's absolutely right to do so because, I mean, there are certain risks, but however, with our technology, with this architecture, I think, and I'm pretty sure, our customers are safe. But we go, and maybe I just want to add an important piece of this puzzle because that's also super important for our customer. As part of this architecture, when we receive the information back from ChatGPT, for example, we do something called toxicity detection. We know that AI is probabilistic and it can sometimes create, let's say, a little bit of harmful or harassing or aggressive content.
So probabilistic here means, of course, that 95% of data, whatever it is good, but then there's the 5% of data that is not actually, that is not valid, that is not a result or not the result that we are looking for. That's
exactly.
What you call it,
right? Exactly, not what we would expect, right? And this content might be, for example, offensive to somebody, right? And we have, as part of this architecture, also a component which analyzes this. And in case we identify, I would even say it's probably less than 5%. However, we identify that, and we show this immediately to the user to warn him or her that please be careful with that content, read through that, and maybe you want to regenerate to not get in trouble.
Are they adjusting to cultural wording, or I mean, are they really when you send it to several countries or you interact with people in other country with other culture, mm-hmm. are they adapting to this, or are they at least mentioning, hey, be careful, read mm-hmm. it through and adapt as you explained before, or how far are we already about this?
I would turn it a little bit around. I think we need to adapt the LLM to those cultural circumstances. I think mm-hmm. we should respect the culture of certain mm-hmm. companies mm-hmm. and the way they interact. Mm-hmm. And they should not adjust to the technology. We should adjust the technology to the cultural needs. And you can do that through this process of grounding with the data, which I have explained before, where we mm-hmm. pull in context. Mm-hmm. So when we are doing those generation as part of the grounding, you can also include cultural aspects to please make sure you're very polite and very respectful with the way you generate content, or make sure it sounds like that. Or if we are different contexts, be more casual because we are maybe engaging with a younger group of people where, you know, a different tone mm-hmm. is acceptable or mm-hmm. even wanted.
So it could be, as I think, as Vanessa implied as well, not just corporate cultures, but also different cultures in different countries. So if, let's say, the system is generating an email to a CEO of a Japanese company,
yes.
it might be phrased still in English, but very differently as if it were phrased to a company I've worked with, a younger CEO, let's say, from the U.S., for example.
Exactly. Yes, this is absolutely the case. And you can adjust their parameters. And again, you need to think, when you start thinking about those three layers of UI, model, and data, you want to apply it on a specific business context, a business process. Think about who is at the end of this process, right? Who will receive the content which we want to generate? And then you need, again, to adjust certain parameters to make sure that the receiver is happy with what is being received, so to say.
You can go further and say, okay, write this email or this message to my customers in Spanish or in Portuguese, because I am sending an email or a message to the CEO in Brazil.
Yes.
So this is super, super nice, right?
So everyone communicates in their own language,
in their own language,
within their
you
own
do not
cultural
have
norms.
These yeah. barriers anymore. Yeah. You know, it opened up not a new field, I would say, but a new interaction yeah. And new connection to the people.
I can give you actually an example I'm working on right now with a customer, and the scenario is the following. They have a shared service center in Eastern Europe in one particular country, and in this particular country, they received the cases from all surrounding Eastern European countries. However, you know, each country has their own language. And they're, you know, super kind of limited on resources, which and dependent on resources which are able to read and speak those Eastern European languages, right? So what I'm building with them right now is a simple translation engine based on GenAI, where they receive cases and service tickets in Polish, in Czech, mm-hmm. you know, in Russian, in all of those languages, and then it translates it automatically for the individual who receives it, so that again we are not dependent anymore on the language.
Roman, I'm a huge fan of any kind of market-driven innovation, especially the trust layer. It now makes sense why it is called that. To wrap up, are there any other examples of market-driven innovations just like this one, like that trust layer?
Right, to maybe add one important piece again of the puzzle that we have. We started with, when we say data, it's mostly structured data. Imagine you have a field and then you have a value next to it. But very, very quickly, the market requested more formats. That can be images or in the context of business, for example, it's PDFs, right? We want to have also PDFs as part of this grounding data processing engine, right? So again, we were faced in the hype phase with this limitation, and we invented again something new, or we used something, you know, in the context of AI to overcome this challenge, which is called a process which is called retrieval augmented generation, different world, RAG. Also called
another new term for me.
Yes.
Vanessa knows that, of course.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
Retrieval.
No, I didn't.
Retrieval augmented generation.
Yes.
So AI retrieves information from, let's say, a PDF, and then builds on that. Did I get that correctly?
Absolutely. Imagine you have thousands of PDFs flying around within your organization, and you want to put a magical AI on top of that, and you ask this AI a question, and then it finds the right document, it finds the right section immediately within seconds, and gives you an answer based on this technology.
It can read PDFs. That's RAG, as it's called. Huh?
So a last question, because mm-hmm. it's always very near to my heart, and it's about people. Mm-hmm. So how do people or employee in general react to this AI and to this new transformation?
Yeah. So generally, I would say, you know, people, employees of a company, they create and generate the value for the organization itself. Mm-hmm. And they're most of the time the source of innovation and creativity. So my suggestion to every customer is involve the business people and technical people right from the beginning, have conversations with them. Because at the end of the day, what we want to do with this new technology is we want to improve their life. We want to make their processes more efficient. Mm-hmm. And, you know, over all the projects and pilots I'm running right now, they are super excited, the business people, about this new opportunity, which enables us, again, to evolve, to make processes simpler, more efficient, and they have the best ideas when and how to apply it. And I'm just guiding them, basically, on that journey, and it's, you know, super exciting, super positive to see what comes out of this combination of, again, leadership, and also people, be technical, but also business. So my recommendation to every organization, bring everybody on the table, get inspired, and start running with this new technology.
Thank you so much, Roman, for this last word. And thank you for being part of the podcast. And that brings us to the end of today's episode. We have explored some fascinating insights about the evolving role of AI, how companies can effectively implement it, and the importance of data and employee engagement in this journey.
And of course, we're saying thank you to Roma. We're saying thank you for watching. I'm Stefan Lendi.
Vanessa Gentile.
See you soon.
Bye-bye.